You're listening to Toi Manaho, Designers Institute of New Zealand's DCAST, specifically Episode 6 of Outside In, No Borders, a series where we explore the lives, perspectives and reflections of a diverse range of New Zealand designers who live and work overseas. My name's Brendan Jarvis, your host and the managing founder of The Space In Between, a behaviour-based design research practice and the home of New Zealand's first and only world-class human-centred design and innovation lab. You can find out more about that and some of the other things we do at thespaceinbetween.co.nz. With me today is our guest, Michael Tam. Michael is a global design director of IBM iX, the global experience design partner for enterprise that sits within IBM's consulting business. At IBM iX, Michael articulates, facilitates, and validates design for clients so that they continue to believe in the business value that human-centered design delivers. Outside of his busy day job, Michael is one of the top five global mentors on ADP list, investing over 8,000 minutes sharing invaluable career advice with more than 150 fellow designers. His contribution to ADP list was recognized by the company's founders in 2020, and Michael now serves on their advisory board, acting as the spokesperson to external stakeholders in their mission to democratize mentorships. Michael is also a member of the Envision Design Leadership Forum, an advisory board member for VRARA Hong Kong, and a course instructor and education designer at H Academy. Starting his career in New Zealand in 2004 as a freelance brand consultant and integrated creative, Michael worked for startups, SMEs and agencies, including BCG2 and Ogilvy, before moving to Hong Kong in 2010, where he still lives. A self-described optimist, Michael believes everyone can be creative and that together we can design a better future. And now he's here with me for this chat on DCAST. Michael, it's great to have you here and welcome to the show.
Hi, Brendan. Thanks for having me. It's great to be virtually back on home turf.
Yes, it's nice to be able to bring you here virtually. It would be nice to do this in person, but we'll deal with the virtual. I'm sure it will be fine.
We're so used to this during COVID, right?
Yes, we definitely became very, very used to it. It's certainly become the thing that I've probably become too comfortable with it, I would say. I need to get back in the room with real humans probably a little bit more often than I have been. Hey, so Michael, you left New Zealand for Hong Kong sometime around 2010. What was it that motivated you to move overseas? And I understand Hong Kong is originally where you're from. So what was it that motivated you to return to Hong Kong?
Well, I think I always see myself as a second generation kid. Is that how they call it? Living between different culture, two cultures. And I always see myself half a Kiwi, half a Hong Konger. So after spending like 15, 16 years in New Zealand, I felt like I needed a bit of a change. I needed to expand a little bit more, but also as much as expanding, I was looking forward to reach back to my roots, which was Hong Kong. So that's what took me back to Hong Kong. And it was also because of a job. I came back to Hong Kong for holiday and went for a friend's wedding. And I thought, okay, why not? I just talk to some agencies and talk to some ECDs. And then I got given a job offer. So I thought, okay, why not? I just take a leap of faith without actual planning for it and came back to Hong Kong. So the rest was history.
And when you were meeting with those creative directors and those ECDs, what was it that you suspect that they saw in you uniquely and specifically as a designer and a creative? What made them extend that job offer to you at that point in time?
Wow. Actually, this is the first time someone asking me this question. It got me thinking now. I believe because I bring something definitely a little bit different to the talent pool from Hong Kong. I think New Zealand given me a chance to be a free thinker. And also I was very, very lucky. I was learning back in at school, in media design school in Auckland. I was learning from some of the best creative directors. And I was taught to think creativity, but from a but from a strategic perspective. So that is something very, very different to a lot of designers and creative in Hong Kong or Asia, because of the environment, the pace of Asia. It tends to train designer to be more focused on craft and quick executions, but not slowing down a little bit just to think about the strategy, the rationale. So I think that's what stood me apart. You know, give that extra bit of, I guess you can call it the a maturity in a sense, because, you know, I do think as your career progress, you learn to be more strategic. But then back then, even as a junior creative, I already got that. So I think that's the training I got from New Zealand. And I think that's what I brought in back to Asia.
Mm. Now, I know that in your intro, I mentioned that you started as a freelance, and I think I described it as an integrated creative. You did some time at agencies, and also it seems like you had some of your own direct clients. In that work journey in New Zealand before you left for Hong Kong, were there any particular people or things or experiences that influence the way in which you practiced your creativity, your design, that you felt lent itself to becoming that, having that more strategic focus that you were then able to bring to Hong Kong?
I think when I first started my career back in New Zealand, when I first finished advertising my education in media design school, that part of my journey came as much as a necessity as well as just open myself to open the doors to more opportunities. So that's why I was freelancing. That's why I was reaching out to direct clients and trying to build my portfolio as much as I'm making a living out of it. Through that period, it definitely taught me a lot about, even as a junior creative, it taught me a lot about how to handle clients, how to handle requests, how to understand briefs, even when it came in a state that is a little bit more fragmented. You know, a lot of the time your clients might not know what they want, right? So you as a creative, as a designer, you need to figure that out, help them to figure that out. So I think a lot of that, my foundation skills came from that period, from just trial and error, just to learn through difficult briefs, difficult clients or assignments. But at the same time, I was also very lucky to meet a lot of wonderful experienced creative leader back in New Zealand. One person really stood out, not just, I was about to say back then, but even to this day, his words ring true to in my mind is James Mock. So James, he made his name as a design leader, ECD, or from FCB, I think. He spent a long time in FCB, the agency, before he moved on to a couple of different places. One advice James gave me, I remember back in the days as a junior creative, I always reach out to all these different ECDs, try to ask for a time to review my portfolio. And I always bring a little notebook to write down all my tech notes, write down all the nuggets of wisdoms. And I remember he said, creativity is an extension of you, is an extension of yourself, of your art, of your point of view, and that still rings true to this day. When I try to bring my personal perspective into my client's project, as for clients as complicated as an enterprise as IBM gets, some of our clients has all these different layers and different needs, but I never forget about that advice that, as a designer, as a creative, is always about extending yourself, extending that your point of view. Art is an extension of you, who you are as a person. So so I always remember that. And that's how I try to practice my craft, practice my art, my design, is to offer a point of view, a uniqueness, how I see the world, how I see my client's business, how I see design related to their business, my point of view. And I think that really served me well, that piece of advice through the years. And I always offer that piece of advice to my mentees nowadays as well.
Mm, that is a really key point for us to go deeper into. And why I say that is because there is sometimes in human-centered design, there's this notion that we as the designer or the researcher must mm-hmm. subjugate ourselves to our users or our mm-hmm. you know our fellow humans who we are designing for. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate the potential tension that exists between that perspective of we are really there as filters to surface up the design based around the needs and the desires of our users versus this perspective that you've articulated where you still bring a unique flavor and perspective and value in your own thinking around the design of the solution for the client's problem? Is this a tension that is at all evident in the way in which you practice, or is this something that you've somehow managed to marry and quite seamlessly follow through in solution design?
I believe more academician sort of practitioner in the discipline might disagree with me, which is totally fine. I do know a lot of people would hold the user data, user insight as the golden rule for how we design, which no disagreement to the importance of it. But for me, for myself, my approach, I always see myself as a very pragmatic designer. So through my training, through the years as well, I definitely find a really, for me, is a really good balance of how I look at human-centered data, insights, and as well as having your own point of view. I always believe that it is important that you do your user research, you get your data, you get your draw insights. But if you come to think about that, even drawing insights from data, that's the extension of your point of view, right? You as the designer, you as the creative, you are the one who's interpreting the data. That is already an extension of who you are. So I don't see there's a conflict. What I see a lot of the time is people might be too rigidly just think, all right, this is the market research, the user research. We're going to stick to the service interpretation, you know, the service meaning of it, superficial meaning of those data. And I think that is sometimes there's a subconscious of laziness in that because you are not pushing yourself to have an interpretation. So I think when I said design and design is an extension of your point of view of who you are. And what I meant is you got to put in the hard work. You got to put in that time to interpret the data, to draw those insights, have your own point of view, and then apply to your design. I never meant by that you as a designer to extending your point of view to have the total freedom of an artist. I always believe that designer is there to solve a problem, is there to solve a business problem, and you're not an expressive free artist who just do whatever you want. That's an artist. That's not a designer. And you know, no offense to that, but it's a very different role, it's a very different task. So I think it is important that we recognize the balance between when you look at a piece of data, you use it as an inspiration rather than use it as an answer. And I think some of the best design practitioners knows that. If you think about Apple, the most common example, right? They do a lot of user research, but at the same time, actually, hold on. I heard, I listened to a podcast from a design leader in from Apple. He actually said that they don't do a lot of research. The funny thing is, as much as we see Apple as a real UX company, which is funny, right? And in this topic, but I do believe they ride on their own years of experience of talking to users and trying to observe, really practice empathy, and then they apply their point of view. So I don't see there's a conflict at all, but I do think you as a designer, you need to be consciously realize whether you are relying on data to make a decision, or are you using data, user research data to inspire you to come up with a point of view rather than being lazy. I think that's how I look at it.
You know, that's a really important clarification. I think that's crystal clear. Just as an aside, I had a conversation on my podcast, Brave UX, with Bob Baxley, mm-hmm. who was a design leader at Apple. He's now mm-hmm. at, I think, ThinkSpot in a SVP role. And he was mm-hmm. describing user research at Apple and basically echoed what you were saying there, that it was not necessarily the way in which the rest of us think of doing user research, but because even right up to the executive levels in Apple, they all have, in his opinion, incredibly good design sensibilities because they're effectively designing products for people like them that across the 100 plus thousand employees, that they've actually got a wonderfully representative sample of the type of people they're trying to create for. So that's a really key point, Michael. And I wanted to ask you, you touched on when you first moved to Hong Kong that perhaps the people that extended that job offer to you saw that you had developed your ability to think creatively and strategically for yourself and not just jump into execution. You've been there for about a decade now. How has the practice of design in Hong Kong, from your own observation, how has that evolved in the time that you've been there? You know, do you feel like a lot of progress has been made and now design in Hong Kong is coming into its own, or do you feel like there's still some road left to be traveled when it's compared and contrasted to other areas around the world?
I'm always trying to be extremely transparent. And the way I see it is there's still a long way ahead for Hong Kong to catch up. But Hong Kong does bring a lot of other value in terms of speed, in terms of how quickly adopt a lot of many technology or many ideas around the world. But when it comes to what we all always refer to as design maturity, I think that's still a long way. And I think that's where Hong Kong can learn from a lot of other countries like New Zealand, which New Zealand is the size of New Zealand population is you know, you can't compare to in terms of the density of that to Hong Kong, right? But it also offer a really good brewing ground. I guess that's the best word for creativity, because I think a lot of the time Kiwis, we look at New Zealand as we see ourselves as a small country, but I see there's also a lot of value because you get to test the market very, very quickly. There's a really mature culture in terms of how people, when I said people, I mean not just designer, but also non-designer in general population, how people treat design as a value-added element to things that they do. And I think that comes through from education. And I think there's a lot of those aspects Hong Kong can learn from each other. And then, of course, Hong Kong, in terms of being at the center of Asia, there's the geolocation of it also mean is have such a great exposure to some of the latest things that happening in different domain, different industry domain, as well as technology. So I think it's always give and take. You can never have that, you know, the sort of the perfect situation, perfect balance. So I think throughout the last 10 years, Hong Kong definitely have matured in terms of the awareness of why it is important to practice UX design, human-centered design. But in terms of when it comes to actual practicing it, there's still a lot of education to do, which is why later on we probably will touch on why I do teaching, why I create a program that teach people how to think, teach people about UX design, because I do believe good design maturity for a company as far as to a country or a city comes from education. And I think if I could contribute a bit of that, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, well, let's go deeper into that. Why is it that that's something, you know, alongside your mentoring, why is it that design education is something that you seem to place so much value and emphasis on? I mean, you're not someone who has a very relaxed day job from the sounds of it. You're a pretty busy person. So why is design education and design mentorship, you know, why is this contribution back to the design community something that's really important to you?
I guess you are asking me the why. The why goes way back to my days as a creative. One of my favorite book, one of my first book that I always read as a creative is Paul Arden's. It's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. I think that's the title. And that's this one page in there, one little story that talks about how you being a creative, that you should be, you shouldn't be, they have a picture of a little girl in, you know, classic situation in a school environment, writing her answer, doing her examination or whatever paperwork or schoolwork, and she was covering up. She was covering up her answer. That, such a great image to paint that picture of the story, that he said you shouldn't be limiting your own ability by not sharing, not giving away your knowledge. And that story roots in my mind since I was a junior creative, that I always, even as a junior, I was always open to giving away my knowledge, because I do believe that when I give it all away, like Paul Arden said, when you give your knowledge away, you force yourself to learn more. You have nothing to hold on to. You can't claim that is your advantage, but your advantage become is you turn that into your advantage become your growth mindset, right? So that habit of giving away has been deep rooted in my sight, you know, my mind through these years as a creative. So that's the beginning of me doing, I guess, mentoring without knowing I did. And through the years, I've been trying to help other designers in my job, even when I was a midway designer or as a junior designer, as I was progressing. And that took me to, even when I was in IBM as a design lead, when I first joined as a design lead, I never realized how much I enjoy helping other designers to grow. And until about two years ago, Edge Academy, which is a part of Happier recruitment platform, the founder, Julio, he reached out to me and he said, well, we are going to develop a education platform, which is Edge Academy. And he said, if you want to create a course to teach UX design, I thought, okay, why not? I never really done something like that, like in a very formulated way to structure, create a course. So given that opportunity and his full trust to create something that, from my point of view, how design should be taught, I created not just a UX design course at the end. It is essentially a course that teach people how to think, how to learn about it, teach people critical thinking, teach people, because I'm a consultant at IBM, so I put in a lot of consulting aspect into it, teach people how to handle the client, how to think beyond UX design, but think about product design, essentially, think about business aspect, technical visibility. So in a 6-week part-time course, I jam-packed it in. It's a true bootcamp that people learn about all this stuff and challenge people how to think. And I think it becomes such a success that I actually bring my learning back to IBM and help our own design training program to evolve to the next phase. So back to your question, why am I doing it? It's because I want to give away all my knowledge and help other designers. And I do think our industry need to grow together. You can't grow on your own. I mean, of course, it's important for you, for your own personal growth, to become a better designer. But to become a better designer, you got to be a good design mentor, a good design teacher, because it helps you as well as you help others. So that's my reason. That's why I'm doing it. And I benefit so much from that journey of creating my own course, teaching people, mentoring people.
There's so much in there. And the first thing that's going on for me as I listen to you explain what it is that you get out of it and why you do what you do is there's this old idiom around those that can't do teach. And I don't think that applies in design. I think what I'm hearing from you is it's those designers who do the best need to teach, because design is a practice and it's actually through the sharing of the knowledge that's built up in the practice of design from our best practitioners that it's almost upon us as members of a field of practitioners to share that knowledge with others within our field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and I always encourage any designers at any level, start giving their knowledge away, start teaching, because I think teaching trains you how to articulate, trains you to reflect on your own knowledge and trying to get to the essence of it so that you can communicate that piece of knowledge, that piece of, you know, that piece of knowledge to allow someone else to understand it. And I think that process makes you a better designer. At least it makes you a better design leader. Not necessarily makes you a better design craftsman, because that's a totally different thing. But no, actually, I would say it makes you a better craftsman as well, because you understand your knowledge. You understand how you did something better. So I do believe being a good designer means you should have the ability to become a good teacher.
Michael, I asked each of my guests for this short mini-series mm-hmm. to send me a photo of either something that was of their portfolio that they really placed a lot of value on, or something else that was related to their role as a designer that they also valued. And you sent me a photo of yourself speaking at a conference in Baku, mm-hmm. which I had not heard of before, but it turns out, unknown to me, it's actually the capital city of Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. So tell me about this particular image. Now, I realize people listening to this won't be able to see this, but tell me about this image of you speaking in Baku. Why did you choose that image to send me out of all of the other things that you could mm-hmm. have sent me?
Well, first of all, when I needed to decide what to send you, I was very clear about one thing. It's not going to be a piece of work, not going to be a piece of not a project, because I do believe that projects come and go. You might have one piece of work that you're really proud of, but I believe it. You know, the next piece of work should be even better. That's my mindset. You know, you got to always push yourself to do better work. So very quickly, I know I want to share a piece of experience with you, and that piece of experience stood out because that, first of all, I have a photo of that, which is a pretty nice photo, I have to say, just to describe it for the audience. But some context of that event, why it stood out for me, because first of all, I was proactive. We at IBM, we have such a huge community, and every one of us are on Slack. We use Slack as our day-to-day communication tool. And I remember quite vividly back then, I saw in one of the channels, someone put up a post and say, "Hey, we are running a developer day, Dev Day conference in Baku. We are looking for a design thinking, enterprise design thinking speaker. Anyone would like to do it?" So I thought, okay, I've never heard of Baku. Only years later, I realized Baku is one of the famous Formula One track in the world tour. So then the rest was history. I flew there, ticket all paid for, company paying for it, for me to get there to share my knowledge, share my point of view on enterprise design thinking. And then I get a bit of time to explore a new city. And to me, experience is the most important thing, not just because I practice experience design, but I do think new experience make you grow as a person. So when I was there, apart from giving a talk in an amazing location, I never knew before I travel. I never knew that Zaha Hadid has an amazing museum in Baku. So when I was there, I found out about that, and I went to see that museum. So all of that came from the moment that I decided, all right, I'll put my hands up, be proactive, take a leap of faith, and then I got a new experience. I get connected to fellow IBMers that I've never met before, who was there to give a talk as well, connected to some other design and development leaders in the industry from outside of IBM as well. So connected to so many people, met new people, have interesting conversation, encounter totally different culture. So that became one of my highlights of my career.
Well, let's talk about your career. Let's talk about, I think earlier on you mentioned that you had been a design lead at one point, and now you're a global design director. And so there's a bit of an arc of your career that's been happening, right? Since you've left New Zealand, it seems that you've gone from strength to strength. How has your practice of design changed as you've taken on more senior roles, different roles, like as a global design director, are you still involved in the hands-on practice of design, or are you now practicing design at the management level or in some different way than you were previously when you were a design lead?
So when at the beginning of my career, I think as much as I said that I bring a more strategic approach to creativity as a advertising creator, as a junior creator, still back then I was much more hands-on because of course, my level and my role asked for that. So back then, the first half of my career definitely focused a lot more on art direction, the craft, how to do layouts, how to choose color, right? All the spacing, everything, the craftsmanships. But as I progressed to be a creative director, by the time that I left the advertising sector, put it that way, I think I already understand how important it is to be more strategic. I learned about the skills of managing a team, leading a team. I learned even subconsciously, I think back then must be subconsciously, I learned the importance of what I call condition design. How do you design a condition for your team or for clients to understand design or practice design? But I was still doing it unconsciously. But when I get to IBM, everything become much more tangible in a lot of ways, because I need to, because I'm part of the consulting arm. So working with business consultants, technologists, I needed to articulate everything that I've been doing through the first half of my career in a way that people can tangibly see it. Not necessarily in just the output of my design, but I need to articulate it in a way that they could understand, almost like virtually tangible, if that makes sense. So my role throughout the last 6 years at IBM has been as much of a hands-on practitioner. I also has been taking on a management role, management task, leading the team, forming the team. But every day is a mixture, it's a hybrid between the two sides of the coin, both, you know, the hands-on and the management part, even until today. And I think that's the nature of being a consultant, is that you need to do both. You need to put on different hats at different time, even with a team supporting you, because you, at the end of the day, you do need to deliver something. And the best way to lead is to lead by action. So you do need to get a little bit hands-on. So I always balance two quite well. But since being with IBM, as I mentioned, everything has become so much more tangible that it really helps me as well to grow, to understand the different parts of your design capability and how to bring it to life, even when you executing management tasks. I think that's how my career sort of changed in terms of my responsibility and my capability.
Well, thinking about the company that you're working for, right? It's one of the world's largest technology companies. It's also one of the world's oldest technology companies. Mm-hmm. And consulting there's nothing better than consulting than to keep your mental axe sharp, as well as probably your practical skills as a design practitioner sharp. Mm-hmm. You mentioned you're in Hong Kong, right? So you're in, I think you used the word epicenter or the heart of Asia. You're right in the thick of it. From your perspective in Hong Kong, what is it that you feel you're seeing emerge in such an epicenter in terms of the cross-section between technology and design, society and culture, that may not be as visible to us here in New Zealand just as a result of our geography and perhaps our scale? What is it that you're seeing on the horizon, or perhaps that's even here now, that is useful for us in New Zealand to be thinking more about, or be curious and look deeper into?
Well, I guess my point of view is never really just limited to Hong Kong because of my role with the global team. Yes, I'm based in Hong Kong, but I'm part of this global design team. It's essentially a virtual global design team. So work on projects across the time zone. So I'm a time traveler. My project range from the time zone in New Zealand all the way, first time zone of the day, right? All the way to UK, US, you know, East Coast, West Coast, and all that. So I guess my point of view will always be sort of...
When do you find time to sleep, Michael? When does that happen?
Well, in between. In between, when I'm going through from one wormhole to another wormhole, that's when I sleep. And the way that I see it is Asia, Hong Kong, there's a lot of things going on that from New Zealand we can definitely learn in terms of everyone talk in... Well, first of all, let's start from Hong Kong. Everyone talks about AI now, just like the rest of the world. And there are a lot of different organizations, different entities trying to tap into that. And Hong Kong is, in a good and bad way, is always very, very quickly to jump onto any sort of hype. And now nobody talk about metaverse anymore. Nobody talk about blockchain anymore. Everyone talk about AI, just like the rest of the world. And a lot of people getting their hands dirty, trying it. So I think that kind of mentality of jumping right into some of these developments, trends in the world, is something that New Zealanders should definitely do as well, not to get left behind. But I also want to again remind us that our strength from New Zealand is that capability of that free thinking, that strategic thinking. So always apply that lens when you jump straight into the hardest topic in the technology world and the business world. Hong Kong, especially for Hong Kong, because it is a financial city, so there's always that flavor when people think about new tech is how can they apply to the financial sector. So the banks and the insurance company, they are always one of the first to try to tap into the latest tech. Of course, back the last 2 years, definitely they tap into XR, AR, VR to blockchain, cryptocurrency, and now definitely NFT as well as now everyone talk about AI, ChatGPT. And there are a lot of startups doing that as well. One is a good friend and partner. We do a lot of collaboration is Prevus.ai, which is a tech education platform. They do a lot of this kind of bite-sized sharing about AI recently as well for ChatGPT. So I think that's something that we as Kiwi, we should definitely get our hands dirty and trying different AI tools, it's moving too quickly. It's just crazy. But also because I'm with IBM and I think it gave me a really healthy sort of perspective because IBM is extremely conscious of ethics and diversity. So not just because of AI, but when we talk about sustainability, we talk about diversity and AI, all of this, when we talk about design, we always apply that lenses. How can we design for inclusiveness? That we have a whole website, a whole guidebook, a playbook that help people to think about that sustainability as well. Our whole enterprise design thinking has a extension that apply to sustainability. And when it comes to AI, we also have that. We actually 2 years ago, before the whole AI hype of because of ChatGPT, we already thinking about what is the relationship between human and AI. How do we apply? How can we design for AI and data privacy and usage, all of that with good ethics? So all of this thing, I think, is when I'm as a Hong Konger diving deep into all this development, my Kiwi side as well come into play. My IBM consciousness also come into play. I always slow down and ask myself, how can we do it properly? How can we design not understanding the whole impact behind our solutions? And I think that is very, very important. And I do think Kiwi designers, not just designers, actually Kiwis, as a country, we have a lot of that in spades. So we should definitely tap into that strength of ours when we practice design. Yeah, that's how I look at it when it comes to the difference between the pacing development in Asia and Hong Kong. Also, when I have that lenses across the different geo as a global designer at IBM, I see you got to find that balance. And I think sooner than later, I think the rest of the world has to encounter that those kind of big difficult questions. I think just last week, you know, the founder of OpenAI, Sam Altman, and an executive from IBM and an AI researcher in politics, they were just doing a testimonial for the U.S. Congress. So I think all of these things are going to come very, very quickly before we even know it. And this morning, I just saw someone share they use AI generated an image of someone blowing up the Pentagon, and then it created a brief drop in the stock market because people don't know it's fake. So it's crazy. These things is so this time is for real. All of this hype and how this new tech is going to change the world. As designers, we need to understand it. And we can offer a new point of view because we practice human-centered design. We understand the ramification of all this tech. And I think we should definitely take the lead, at least know that we can contribute a lot to that topic.
Mm. Yes, it certainly seems to be the question of our time, the evolving relationship between people and machine and just what that looks like. There's certainly been some very hard lessons learned, particularly from machine learning, about what goes wrong if we don't take a diverse and ethical, slower approach to our implementation of technology. So I certainly hear you there. It almost sounds, Michael, like you were cautioning New Zealanders to speed up a little bit in terms of embracing some of this new technology, but also not to lose some of the more considered, perhaps more methodical, or perhaps more human-centered perspective that we bring to our work in terms of being a little slower in the decision-making that we go through before we actually implement things that can have, you know, negative consequences if they're not well considered. Now, you also talked there about your sort of spanning two worlds, this world as a person who spent a significant amount of time in New Zealand, you're New Zealander, and then you've got your world in Hong Kong, you know, as I think you described yourself as a Hong Konger.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about that, that gives you quite a unique perspective to share back with the New Zealand design community, because you're an Asian New Zealander, you've spanned both countries. They're quite different, as my outside in perspective, in the way in which they operate. What, if any, obstacles have you encountered, both in New Zealand and perhaps also back in Hong Kong, that some of your colleagues who don't share your same background might not be aware of?
I think, yes, I certainly live in between the two extremes. Hong Kong is extremely pacey, cutthroat. New Zealand is extremely, I wouldn't say slow, but it's just chill. I like the chillness of it, and it gives ourselves space to think. And Kiwis are extremely friendly as well. So when I have that perspective of the two ends, it's easy to see in the strength and weakness in how to blend the two. But with friends or colleagues who don't see the two sides, they easily get like, very easily to get pigeonholed, or the point of view, tunnel visioned on a certain way of life that is just the way of life. So I think, and I don't mean it is just applying to Kiwis or Hong Konger, but I think, which brings it back to why we practice to be how we live our life as a designer, how we live our life as a creative, because I think at the very root of why we're doing what we do is because we have this innate curiosity, right? This curiosity is what drives us to be a designer. And I think we got to, no matter which part of the world you live in, Hong Kong or New Zealand or anywhere, you got to always remind yourself that and keep that fire going, because that fire is going to bring you to experience more of life and see other parts of the world and broaden your perspective. And earlier you said, am I cautioning New Zealanders, Kiwis to make decisions quicker and all that? I actually don't mean that we are slow, but I think because we geographically we are placed at the edge of the world, so it's very easy that we get into this relatively comfort zone because we're so chill, we're so friendly. We almost have a little bit of that comfort zone because of where we are, that we are happy with what we have got within the country. And that's and it by no means devaluing what we have, because I actually think because we are so good at what we do, a lot of people outside of New Zealand don't know, and maybe even within New Zealand, you don't see the contrast, you don't know how good you are. The New Zealand design practice, the maturity is actually really good compared to Hong Kong, compared to a lot of places, is really mature. The pace is fast as well in a lot of ways, in a different sort of ways as well. But because of geolocationally where we are, and we are, and also because we are quite happy with that maturity. When, for example, when we talk about service design, it's way ahead of a lot of places in New Zealand than compared to a lot of places. So because we are mature, we are chill, so we subconsciously might not know that we should push ourselves a little bit more. We are in a little comfort zone right there. So which is why in my last response, I talk about how we need to almost consciously and proactively outreach to the rest of the world to expand our perspective so that we see more of the other side of the coin, or see more of that full spectrum, so that you have a contrast. Even when we are one of the most mature design practitioning country in the world, we should still see that differences, that contrast, so we know how good we are, so that we can push ourselves to the next level. And I think, again, go back to the geolocation. Are there other places Kiwi would like to go apart from UK? Right? So we subconsciously, we have that comfortness to go to just a certain places or expose ourselves to just a certain places. Will you throw yourself at the deep end to go to, I don't know, go to Shanghai in China, right? To experience that very different culture, or go to Vietnam, you know, one of the most, you know, or Indonesia, one of the quickest developing countries in the whole world. That market is crazy. Middle East as well. So many people move to Middle East. And I think even myself, I try to remind myself of not being comfortable, even though I'm living between these two extremes, because I, at the end of the day, I did spend a long time in both Hong Kong and New Zealand. So this almost become too comfort zone for me. So how do I push myself? I also remind myself of that. So for the Kiwi audience on this podcast, I would say, ask yourself that question. How could you push yourself more to expand beyond the geographic location of New Zealand, your consciousness of that New Zealand industry, but more, actually not just New Zealand, ANZ, beyond that, you know, to keep growing as a designer.
Michael, that's a very diplomatic kick up the pants, as we would say here home in New Zealand. Have you considered a career as a diplomat before?
Well, never imagined that, but I guess
could be on the cards.
I don't know. I love what I do, being a designer. I think as a designer, I think a lot of the time people see designer, we especially non-design community, you know, the non-design population, look at designer, they judge or perceive designer by our output. So what do we create? What is that art piece? What is that piece of, what's that campaign? What's that piece of work? But they don't know the true value of designer is being that connector, that curator, that facilitator of conversation, facilitator of alignments. And I think maybe that's why being you learn to be a bit of a diplomat, a bit of a politician in a way, whatever way you want to term it, because throughout your career, you learn to balance all these different forces, all these different stakeholders. And yeah, I don't know how many designers turn into a politician, but I do think we do have that elements as your career progress. You learn to how to balance all those forces. And I think if you're conscious about this role of a designer, being the connector, the facilitator, these kind of skills will come into play. So I don't know what's next for me, but I do like my job as a designer.
Well, Michael, that's a wonderful place for us to bring our conversation down to a close. Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's been wonderful to spend this time with you, and I really appreciate you taking the time today to share your stories and your insights with the New Zealand design community.
Thank you, Brandon. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks for having me, all the audience. I'm happy to connect in the future again, and happy to have more conversations. We should do more. We should do more sharing as a community. I think it's important. And that would be my call to action for the all the audience, is to share your story, share the New Zealand Kiwi stories. There's a lot the rest of the world can learn from that. So please speak up and share.
Thank you, Michael. That's an important reminder as well. And to our listeners, thank you for being with us for this episode of DCAST, the podcast of Toi Manaho Designers Institute of New Zealand. Keep an eye out for the next episode in this Outside in No Borders series. I can't actually say when that will be, as this was the last scheduled episode for recording at this point, but no doubt I'll be back with some more at some point soon. Now's a really good time for you to take a moment and subscribe to or follow the pod if you haven't already, because there will be other series and episodes on other topics from other guest hosts coming out soon. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please don't keep it all to yourself. Share a link to it on your social, especially on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And when you do, please tag us so we can say thanks for passing it along. And if you're feeling really generous today, give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. They are really helpful with getting the pod out to more New Zealand designers. Well, that's it from me. Enjoy the rest of your day.